Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hello and welcome to the Transfer Window, the podcast that brings you the news before it becomes news, as well as insight and analysis into all the subjects you're talking about in football. I'm Ian McGarry, and with me as always is Duncan Castles. Do not accept cheap imitations because they just repeat what Duncan says and sometimes what I say as well. But of course, as Oscar Wilde said, the most flattering thing is to be imitated. So with that in mind, let's get through the day's agenda. We've got news for you on Manchester City, on Robert Lewandowski and interest from the Premier League, Kylian Mbappe, Juventus finances, and an interesting structured deal that they have done for Manuel Locatelli, as well as Celtic and Brighton, and the return of the donkey. Speaking of donkey, Duncan, Robert Lewandowski has, I think, none too subtly let it be known that he is unhappy with his current situation at Bayern Munich. Clearly a player who is a complete legend at the Bundesliga club, but also one who is out of contract in 2 years' time. He is 32 now and is the highest paid player at the club. His agent, who is Pini Zahavi, I could probably call Pini a transfer miser, can't I?
Just ask Pini.
I will. Transfer guru Pini Zahavi has been working behind the scenes to find out what interest there is in his client. And this is because Lewandowski is unhappy with the fact that Bayern have refused to open negotiations on an extended contract for him. As I said, age 32, he has 2 years left, but feels he can play at least 2 years more, if not beyond that. Lewandowski has been offered to Liverpool, to Manchester United, and to Manchester City, each of whom have expressed a tepid amount of interest in the player regarding the possibility of signing him. However, each of them has also said that the 110 million euros which Bayern are leaking to the German media that they would require to allow Lewandowski to leave would be far too much for a player who is that age and 2 years out of contract this summer. It's also our information that Lewandowski himself would probably prefer to stay at Munich, and that would be unsurprising given his long association with the club. One source very close to Bayern has told us that if Bayern were to sell the Poland international, then fans of the club would probably burn down the Allianz Arena, which is a bit strong, but at the same time, not really unexpected given Lewandowski's goal-scoring record and indeed trophy haul that he has contributed massively to over his career there. Duncan, this is a very interesting one, especially with regards to Manchester City, as I see it, because City obviously still involved in a stalemate with Tottenham Hotspur and their pursuit of Harry Kane. Lewandowski, okay, is 4 years older, but is very much still a proven goal scorer, someone who could certainly do a job in the Premier League. Could this just be leverage to get Bayern to come to the table and extend his contract, or do you believe that it's a genuine, because remember, the actual briefing that was given was that he is looking for a new challenge. Obviously, English football would be that new challenge. But at the same time, as someone famously once said, there's no place like home.
I think you've got a market at the moment where people know that there is a vast sum of money in a tight market in general waiting to sign strikers. Real Madrid have got that money and they've been saving that money up for a long time. And they're still adding to their pile by doing things like selling Martin Odegaard to Arsenal, as they've done this week, in order to sign Kylian Mbappe, which they believe there is still a possibility of being done in this window. Manchester City very openly trying to get Harry Kane, the top striker in the Premier League, to move from Tottenham to the north of England. Kane wants to move. The sums being talked about are huge. The initial bid was £100 million and City are indicating that they're prepared to go substantially above that, albeit including players from their camp who want to leave. And Pep Guardiola has openly said that he has three or four players, most notably Bernardo Silva, who are ready and want to leave the club as part of that deal. There's big wages on offer to Harry Kane from Manchester City. You mentioned Liverpool as one of the clubs that Lewandowski has been offered to. You also last week reported that Liverpool are planning a new centre forward and have money set aside for that. And they also have their sights set on Kylian Mbappe, though they know that's going to be a difficult deal to do. I think offering Lewandowski to Liverpool is particularly ambitious because he is 32 years of age and that does not fit FSG's working method in the transfer market. He's already very heavily paid. I believe his maximum salary at Bayern at present is worth 20 million euros gross per season. So I don't think they're going to get a bite there. Manchester United, we know long-term, are in the market for a centre forward. They've retained Edinson Cavani for this season, but there was a point at which they were considering bringing a new striker in, and that's still in their plans. And I think if you catch them at the right moment with the right player, a deal can possibly be done there. So it's no surprise that Zahavi is offered to those three players in the market, and no surprise that it's being done at this late stage. And you've given us the motivation. Lewandowski's not happy that his achievements at Bayern, which are substantial, he's entering his eighth season at the club. He scored 297 goals in 331 games for him. He's just come off a season where he scored 41 in 29 Bundesliga games, which is obviously a sensational return. He feels undervalued, and you have this talk springing up around Bayern Munich that they are lining up Erling Haaland as his replacement. So it's a good time to try and get that new contract if you're Lewandowski. But I think we went into this market talking about how important strikers were and how the movements of certain strikers were going to determine how dominoes fell. And what else happened. And I think we're still there, you know, with less than 2 weeks to go. We're very much in that process of, does Kylian Mbappe move this summer? Do Madrid put that money across to Paris Saint-Germain immediately? Because if they do, I will be incredibly surprised if Paris Saint-Germain do not respond by going out and making a significant signing to dampen down the headlines of losing their star Frenchman, and I think this is an important factor here, their star player from their own country, against their will at the tail end of the market. They've had the most showy market of anyone, and they've been boasting about it and talking about how they must win every game, not just win every trophy, but win every game. I don't see Qatar taking it lightly if Mbappe gets his way, if Florentino Perez gets his way and goes to Madrid, and then there's money to be spent. A replacement comes in. You could, for example, see Paris Saint-Germain deciding, if they lose Mbappe, that the player to replace him with is Paul Pogba, who we know is running down his contract, French national team player, so you get a new star Frenchman in, which leaves money in Manchester United's hands to work on the areas of the team that they are still targeting, and which they've said they will do if they can make a transfer happen. Let's add another player to this. Again, something we've known about and reported on the podcast since ahead of the window. Juventus want to move Cristiano Ronaldo out. They have been working on that throughout. It's been done very discreetly, in the sense that at no point will Juventus say publicly they want to sell Cristiano Ronaldo. But Max Allegri's plan has been one in which he would like Ronaldo's wages taken off the wage bill so he can restructure elsewhere. They don't have a lot of cash at the moment, which we have seen in the Manuel Locatelli deal, which I think we can talk about the dynamics of that later. He is building his attack, his plan for the attack around Dybala, because he would like Ronaldo to be out, and Dybala is a player he trusts and has worked with before, and feels he can build the best attack that's possible to him in the circumstances, minus Ronaldo, with Dybala at the lead. But the money will be needed from Ronaldo's deal to get a new contract to Dybala. So there are a lot of things in play at the moment which may click into place in this last week, and really substantial sums of money sitting, waiting to be spent in certain areas. And obviously, if that Kane deal goes through, if that's the biggest transfer Tottenham Hotspur have to come and bring in their replacement striker, and we know that their principal target is Dusan Vlahovic, and you've got the Fiorentina president Rocco Commisso talking about Vlahovic and saying there are lots of teams interested in him, but I won't even put a price on him, because he knows that there's the opportunity for his club to benefit from that cash that's sitting waiting to be spent if one of these big deals happens in the next week and a half.
I think it is interesting, Duncan, and of course, you know, you and I are long enough in the game to know the different variables which are factors in transfers and how clubs operate, how agents operate with regards to forcing or not persuading, let's just say, moves for certain players. Now, if City were to declare, and I mean even privately, because as everyone knows, a lot of stuff goes on under the radar, but is heard in terms of other clubs. Therefore, for instance, Pini Zahavi has a very good relationship with Daniel Levy at Tottenham. If City were to express a solid interest in Lewandowski, then Levy's going to get to hear about that. He's thinking, oh, am I going to lose the fee on Kane here because City are going to plump for someone else, and therefore the merry-go-round suddenly hits the buffers and something has to give, as it were. And at the same time, City benefit probably from that situation as well, because Levy might be more amenable to coming closer to City's valuation of Harry Kane and what they're prepared to pay, around £125 million, rather than let the opportunity to sell the player at his optimum value at the time in his career when he can achieve the optimum value for Tottenham Hotspur. What is interesting as well, though, as you have pointed out, is the Cristiano Ronaldo situation. A player who is clearly still super fit, still performing at the highest level. Someone who is undoubtedly one of the game's superstars. And interest in Cristiano from Manchester City. I'm told very reliably that Real Madrid will not look to re-sign Ronaldo. They are absolutely focused on Kylian Mbappe. And obviously the salary and transfer fee that that will require, should it be done in this window, is going to take up their budget with regards to the biggest spend of the summer, and indeed their biggest spend potentially that they've ever had. Therefore, Ronaldo has to find a different new home, as it were. But I'm kind of reminded here of the old Welcome to Manchester poster when Carlos Tevez joined Manchester City from Manchester United. And the idea that Ronaldo would go to City rather than go back to United, which has been mooted, to be fair, is one which is very intriguing and also quite controversial, really, because Ronaldo has said on several occasions that he sees Manchester United as kind of his spiritual football home, given that he left Sporting Lisbon at a very early age for Old Trafford, and obviously considers Sir Alex Ferguson as a father figure to him. But at the same time, his wages are around 900,000 euros per week. And probably City or PSG are the only two clubs who could afford to match that and pay him if he were to move from Juventus. And Juventus themselves have great financial problems with what they can spend and not. And it's a situation which needs to be resolved. And Cristiano himself, despite criticising people who have made comments about his availability or indeed the opportunity of him moving this summer, did leave the door open with regards to what may happen. And so when you tell us that it is the case that Juventus want him out of the club because of the financial burden of his salary and are willing to take a hit on his transfer fee, which was around, I think, 86 million euros when he left Real Madrid, then that is in itself going to be a huge, huge deal in the next 11 days.
Look, there's no question that Juventus would be delighted if Manchester City could be convinced to take Cristiano Ronaldo. Their priority is purely financially driven. It's not a sporting issue. It is that they are committed to too much salary for Ronaldo, and COVID has hit them hard. You can see the extent of that in how they put together the Locatelli deal. Locatelli wanted to move to Juventus. He was their principal target in midfield. They had to concoct a structure in which he comes on a two-year loan, where I'm told they will pay nothing to Sassuolo for the first 2 years, and an obligation to buy at 35 million euros in 2023. Now, obviously, that has to be done with the consent of Sassuolo, a club that's done a lot of business with Juventus in the past, and guidance is that basically they helped them to make this happen when they had money on the table, which would have come quicker from Arsenal, Locatelli wanting to go to Juventus. But that shows you the state that Juventus's finances are in. Therefore, find a club to move him to. As you say, Real Madrid have ruled themselves out. Paris Saint-Germain have gone in another direction. Manchester United have been offered and haven't bitten so far. You can see where the proposal comes from, because as I said, there's, you know, £100 million plus of transfer fee, agents' commissions, a big salary that's been budgeted by Manchester City to bring a centre forward in. And the argument would be, well, here you can have a player who is a proven scorer, particularly in the Champions League, that trophy that you desperately want to win, to beat Qatar as Abu Dhabi, to be the first Middle East owners to win the Champions League. Here you can have a guy who excels in the Champions League for a lower cost, or an equivalent cost across the duration of the contract to what you're prepared to pay for Harry Kane, who's younger, but arguably not in as good physical condition in terms of availability on the pitch. His track record of availability on the pitch was not as good as Ronaldo's, and who you probably won't be able to take any of that transfer fee back in the future should you choose to move him anyway. It's essentially money that's going into one star striker with no return expected on it. So you can see why the proposal makes sense, and particularly with Levy in that situation where he's been playing hardball with City and dragging it out, and everyone is waiting to see what Levy's true intentions are. As you said, the Lewandowski offer could have been benefit to Manchester City in terms of putting pressure on Levy. From that perspective, I don't think Pep Guardiola's helped very much, because he was asked about Lewandowski in today's press conference and said, next question, he's such an important player for Bayern Munich and he will stay at Bayern Munich. I'm not going to talk with 11 days left about the transfer market. So he doesn't really seem to have got the memo if the idea was let's shove Daniel Levy down the line and get him back to the negotiating table and get a solution to this and get Harry Kane in.
To be fair, Pep did say something similar about Leo Messi finishing his career at Barcelona. We all know how that ended up. That didn't age well, Pep. We know you're listening.
You know, I'm not slow to criticise Pep Guardiola when he deserves it, but I don't think any of us expected Barcelona to be the ones to turf Messi out.
It was La Liga, wasn't it, who didn't ratify the contract because of FFP. So I guess, you know, we can criticise Juan Laporta all we like with regards to being the man who lost Barcelona's greatest ever player. But in actual fact, it was a combination of circumstances. So yes, you're right, Duncan. It wasn't exactly, you know, the fault of the club or indeed their decision unilaterally that Messi joined Paris Saint-Germain. However, in the case of Cristiano Ronaldo and Juventus, it does seem that is a relationship which is destined to end sooner rather than later. It'd be brilliant to see him back in English football. And as I said, you know, he is super fit and still extremely competitive. However, the salary is something which is certainly a handicap in terms of who can afford it. But if anyone can, City can. Pep's never worked with Cristiano Ronaldo, but has obviously worked with other superstar players. So it would be interesting should City decide that would be an investment worth taking. Duncan, you broke the story about the Monaco defensive midfielder, Aurélien Tchouaméni, with regards to interest from the Premier League, and I believe you have an update with interest from Chelsea in the player.
Yeah, we said on an earlier podcast that Manchester United were monitoring his situation, had been in touch with his representatives. Monaco currently value him at €40 million. They are halfway through their Champions League playoff with Shakhtar Donetsk. They lost the home leg 1-0. If they go out next week, then the expectation is that their valuation of Tchouaméni will be reduced and he will be accessible at a lower price than that. As we said, also being watched by essentially all the top clubs in Europe, Juventus amongst them. They have now done Locatelli, so I think they are out of the equation for this particular transfer. I just add a little note on Juventus, and since we're talking about Manchester United at the same time, they have during the summer proposed a swap deal for Nemanja Matic, which would have seen Aaron Ramsey going in the other direction to United, but was rejected by Manchester club. But Chelsea are one of those interested clubs, and again, My information is that they have been in direct contact with the players' camp and advised them that they won't make an offer at this stage, but given, depending on what happens in the final days of the market, depending on which players they can sell, and we know that Chelsea probably employ as many players as any other club in European football with their extensive loan army, depending on how they can rearrange their finances from sales, then they could possibly move for Tchouaméni in the final days. So again, we're getting a lot of stuff concertinaed into the final weeks of the market, which isn't a surprise because of the dynamics of it. There's a little bit of extra cash being pushed in by the CVC deal being accepted by La Liga. And a lot of these players, younger players who clubs want to take because they see them developing and having increasing value down the line, a lot of them, I think the transactions might happen in those final days. And Tchouaméni definitely one to pay attention to see how that develops.
I think you're absolutely correct in calling that, Duncan, with regards to what happens in the final few days of the window. All of the indications I've had from speaking to chief executives and recruitment departments around Europe, as well as in the EPL, have been that they expect to do business in that final week or so. Again, I've said it before, I don't understand the logic in that, because prices go up, not down, when you get to the biting edge of the market closing. But that's the way football operates. Moving slightly down the Premier League, although not that far, because Brighton and Hove Albion are in eighth place currently after one game, having won their opening match of the season at Burnley. And they have been involved and continue to be interested in signing a new number nine, or certainly not a number nine because Neil Mopey has that jersey, but a new striker. We've reported in the past about their pursuit of Odson Edouard, which seems to have stalled, if not halted, with regards to Celtic's demands on the guaranteed price of the France international, a name which is an interesting one, has come in to the debate with regards to potentially coming to Brighton, and that is Darwin Núñez, Duncan. And I understand that you've obviously done some research on Núñez, and perhaps this would be a little bit of a risk for a player who's young and perhaps slightly volatile.
Yeah, I think Núñez has been on Brighton's recruitment list for quite some time now. They tried last summer to get him in. Benfica threw a huge amount of money at that deal. It was something that their incoming coach, Jorge Jesus, wanted, with the idea that they'd make a significant challenge in the Champions League and regain the Portuguese title. That went horribly wrong. Record transfer fee paid for him. Scored just 6 goals from 29 league appearances for Benfica last season, 14 goals in total. He's an interesting player because everyone I talk to about him say there's a serious talent there. They don't think he's an out-and-out finisher. They actually think he's better as a provider of chances, which is ironic given the one thing that Brighton need is someone to finish rather than provide chances. They're as the people following their XG statistics in detail will tell you, they were the most creative, but relative to efficiency in front of goal, that one of the worst teams in the Premier League last season. And Núñez followed a similar path in that he had more assists than goals as centre forward for Benfica. two elements which I think are important here is he's had a serious knee injury early in his career, and last season suffered another knee injury. Played through that injury with Benfica's medical staff assessing it and deciding that it wasn't a serious problem. And then at the end of the season, had another knee operation. The briefing was that it would be rapid recovery, but currently the expectation is he won't be back until October. So Brighton must have real certainty over this deal if they're prepared to sign a player who has been out with that kind of knee problem twice and would not be able to take a proper medical at present before the end of the window. Another thing that's been said about him is he's quite an emotional player. And if he starts well for a team, then he can go on a run and perform at the top of abilities. But if he struggles at the beginning of a period, then it could work out very badly. So there's two kind of warning signs on that one. The benefit, of course, with Nunez is Benfica need to bring money in, desperately trying to sell quite a lot of their players to various European clubs. And his salary demands are significantly less than Odson Edouard. Edouard, I understand, is looking for £85,000 per week, which would make him by some margin the best paid player at Brighton. Would have repercussions for salary amounts at the rest of the club. There are complications either way. But what we know is that Brighton need to get a centre forward in and are working hard on that. Also, looking at left back, where they've made a substantial offer to Getafe for Marc Cucurella, 23-year-old who they signed from Barcelona last summer. I'm told that that offer was for 14 million euros guaranteed, plus another 4 million in what are described as achievable bonuses, rejected by Getafe. The Getafe president, Angel Torres, insisting that he will only let Cucurella go if the full 18 million euro release clause is met, which of course puts Brighton in a position where should they choose to go down a certain strategy and they decide that Cucurella is absolutely the player they want at left back, that they could trigger that release clause on the final day of the window and get a bit of revenge on Getafe for being so difficult to negotiate with, in that they leave them without their first choice left back and very little time to replace.
Brighton fans, Duncan, have a reputation for being clever and quirky with regards to their chance. I don't think they're going to have much trouble with Cucurella, given the 70s dance craze, for those of you who might remember the Cucaracha, and the fact that that would be quite an easy one for them to extrapolate and make into a chant should he arrive at the club. Just to finish off in terms of news, Duncan, and you have again broken this story, and that is about Celtic looking for a replacement for Odson Edouard, despite the fact that they have yet to sell Edouard. And the Eredivisie's top scorer, Chakoumakis, has been heavily linked with the Glasgow club, with Werder Bremen also interested in signing him. Developments yesterday, as far as your information is concerned?
Yeah, Celtic, as we reported in the Daily Record yesterday, have agreed a transfer fee with Venlo, €2.5 million, plus a sell-on clause in the Dutch club's favour. They, I'm told, pushed very hard to get that through. They reduced Venlo's asking price and wanted to accelerate the deal to stop Giakoumakis going to Werder Bremen, who he met, travelled to Germany to speak to earlier in the week. Celtic, interestingly, have offered less money than Bremen. Interestingly, because Bremen are in the second division of the Bundesliga, having been relegated last season. And I think it's a measure of Celtic's attempt to reduce their wage bill, that they're offering less than a second division Bundesliga club for a player who was the top scorer in the Eredivisie last season, 26 goals in 30 matches for a team that were relegated and finished 1 point off the bottom of the table. Was quite an extraordinary return. Could tell you Giakoumakis earned himself a substantial performance bonus for finishing as the leading scorer, because he'd had written into his contract when he signed for Venlo a year ago that he would get an extra amount on his salary should he finish as leading scorer, which I'm sure Venlo were not expecting to be activated, and certainly not activated in the same
Duncan?
Season they got relegated.
Did he take penalties?
He does take penalties. He's very good at converting penalties.
Honestly, that's the worst nightmare for any chairman or club owner. If they include a bonus clause in a player's contract for scoring goals, who then takes penalties?
8 penalties he scored, but he finished the leading scorer with 7 more than Daniel Malin, who scored 19, who was subsequently sold to Dortmund for 30 million euros. So If you want to watch Giakoumakis' abilities as a finisher, go on YouTube and have a look, and you'll see that he scores all kinds of goals with both feet. Very good in the air, actually very good receiving the ball in the air and in defensive situations, and a strong tackler, good in a high press, which obviously is a system that Ange Postecoglou uses at Celtic. So you can see why Postecoglou has contacted the player direct to try and convince him to come. The problem Celtic have is that Werder Bremen, having seen that the fee was agreed, have now come back and agreed with Venlo that they will match Celtic's offer for the player. So it's down to Celtic to convince Giakoumakis that they're the better club to go to, and I think probably that will require them to improve the financial package, given that Bremen are offering more money as a second tier club, and given that, look, there's a number of players in Celtic squad who are substantially better paid than the numbers that they're proposing to Giakoumakis at present.
Well, at 2.5 million euros, I might make an offer from myself or a five-a-side team. I'm not sure what he's asking for in salary, but at one game a week, maybe we can persuade him.
But if you do, you won't let him take the penalties. We all know that.
He's not getting a scoring bonus, that's for sure. I actually thought that had gone out of fashion for precisely the reason that free kicks and penalties were always hoarded by strikers who had a goal-scoring bonus. And as far as I know, most players do not have that clause in their contract. So, as you said, probably the reason Giakoumakis had it was because Venlo had probably absolutely no consideration that he would achieve it, and then he did. So, there we go. That's a little bit of an unusual situation in modern European football. I'm pleased to say that we are returning the donkey, which has been missing for the last couple of weeks, to the podcast. Duncan, we are going to dedicate, or indeed nominate, this particular golden statue as the Dominic Raab, who of course is the UK's foreign secretary, who basically was on a beach in Crete and did not make a phone call to the Afghan foreign minister about the impending fall of Kabul to the Taliban. It did remind Duncan and I of some situations in the past when football players were on the beach when perhaps they should have been somewhere else. So therefore, we're going to have the Dominic Raab Award for being on the beach when, in fact, you should have been doing your job. Let me just open up the golden envelope, Duncan. Here we go. It looks a bit rustly this week. That's because we haven't awarded the donkey for a while. There we go. And the nominations are one Harry Kane for being on the beach in the Bahamas and then in Florida for a week longer than apparently he was supposed to be. Although, I have to say in mitigation that he was staying at two of Joe Lewis's, the Tottenham owner's resorts at the time. So you would kind of think that perhaps Joe might have known that his star striker was actually on holiday for that extra week, even though it was claimed that he had been late back for pre-season training and indeed has yet to make an appearance for the club, of course, also under the auspices of the bid from Manchester City as well. So Harry Kane is our first nomination. Our second is an old favourite. You will all appreciate it because we never tire here at the Transfer Window podcast of bringing it up. But set your watch, get your Timex out, and when Neymar's sister's birthday comes around, you know that Neymar will be injured and will be on the Copacabana with his sister during Mardi Gras every year. Amazing with the sheer synchronicity of how Neymar manages to pull that one off. And thirdly, Carlos Tevez, who we mentioned earlier in the pod, his refusal to come on to the pitch against Bayern Munich in the Champions League match for Manchester City, and then heading off to the beach afterwards. Duncan, I think it's neck and neck here in terms of, you know, who wins this one, but obviously the Donkey is a very prestigious award, so I will leave it to you to make your judgment.
Well, ruling out Harry Kane because the brief from his camp was that the extended holiday was with the permission of Tottenham Hotspur, and in fact he's upset that the club hasn't clarified that to date, and that information you passed on about Joe Lewis's resorts would certainly support the Kane argument.
It is a bit of a giveaway, isn't it?
Neymar, again, look, in normal circumstances you give it to Neymar, but I think what you've got to factor in here is that this is done with the authority of Qatar, and they're prepared to pay that much money for a player of his status and give him the latitude to disappear.
Hang on,
off.
He did it at Barcelona as well, Duncan. It's not just PSG when he's disappeared.
Well, in this case, he has permission, so that excludes him from the award. Whereas Carlos Tevez, on the bench, refusing to come on during a match and then disappearing off to Argentina for a substantial period of time when he was the highest paid player at Manchester City. I think that's the clear winner. He gets the Dominic Raab Award, and maybe we can arrange for the two to meet. That would be an interesting conversation.
It certainly would be. I remember Graham Souness at the time, who was commentating, or certainly an analyst on that game, absolutely tearing strips off him and saying he should be sacked immediately and never play for City again. Thinking to myself, well, therein lies a true Scotsman who believes that you should turn up for your work no matter what happens. So, well done, Carlos Tevez. I believe that is your first donkey. Obviously, we hope it won't be your last because you are someone who we do like to talk about in the moments that we have, despite the fact you've kind of disappeared back to South America. But we shall indeed revisit, I'm sure, your career in the future. As for now, that has been the second podcast of this week for the Transfer Window. Please engage with us on our social media channels, which are at Transfer Podcast on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Duncan is on at Duncan Castles. I'm at Garbo SJ. You can find us on YouTube. Just search Transfer Window Podcast. We will be back next week. And of course, it's exciting because it will be into the final few days of the window. And of course, we'll be bringing the news before it becomes news, as well as avoiding cheap imitations. Have a good weekend. Stay safe, be well, and thanks for listening.